from ACB Radio Mainstream. Welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
I'd like to begin by thanking our producer on Tuesday Topics, Brian Charlson, and our recorder and editor, Mr. Steve Bauer from Kansas, without whom this program would be in big trouble. And obviously, I'd like to thank George Bies and Talking Communities for devising and making available the software that we're using to record this community radio program. Tonight on Tuesday Topics, we're fortunate to have with us someone who I've had the privilege of knowing for about 10 or 15 years. And we've had him on Tuesday Topics once before to talk about access technology, but that's not what he's going to talk about tonight. There are probably few people in the access technology field who are more respected than Noel Runyon, but I don't know them. For the most part, Noel is perceived as a person who has been there from the beginning and has been involved in virtually all facets of the access technology field. And that means that he actually brings a pretty broad range of skills to the specific issue that he is concerned with now. And that issue is voting machines. Last week we spent an hour that, for me anyway, went by very quickly talking about voting systems and talking about some of the problems that began to emerge with accessible voting. And we're going to spend some more time this week with Noel Runyon, a noted software engineer and someone who has just published a major report on what we can do to make accessible voting better. What I thought might be a good way to bring us up to speed would be to at least take a look at a statement which Noel is currently looking at trying to get some signatures on, because it will in fact provide what amounts to a summary of what we discussed in our first hour. In just a moment, what I will go ahead and do is read that statement.
It's Noel here, and we have right now about almost 40 signatories on this. We were looking for people that are mostly people with disabilities and leaders in the disabilities field and or advocates for people with disabilities. We have leaders in the ACB, a leader from NFB, and people that represent other disabilities.
Americans with Disabilities call for election systems featuring both accessibility and security. And this is what the statement says. Voters with disabilities, sensory impairments, and special language needs have long been disenfranchised in large numbers as a result of lack of access to the voting process. For many of us, the passage of the Help America Vote Act of 2002 held tremendous hope and promise for secure and reliable voting, a guarantee that every voter would have access to the voting process. Electronic ballot systems, such as the Direct Record Electronic DRE machines, formerly called touchscreens, now in use, have quickly proven to be neither fully accessible to all voters nor secure and accurate methods for recording, tallying, and reporting votes. While the goal of private voting has been achieved by some voters, this has often been without meaningful assurance that our votes have been counted as cast. Additionally, many other voters have been disappointed and frustrated because we have not been able to vote privately and independently as we had hoped and as voting system vendors had promised. It is now clear that in order to guarantee reliability and security in our elections, it is necessary for the voter to be able to truly verify the accuracy of his or her ballot, the ballot that will actually be counted. The only voting systems that permit truly accessible verification of the paper ballot are ballot marking devices. These non-tabulating devices, either electronic or non-electronic, assist the voter in marking and verifying votes on paper ballots that can either be optically scanned or hand-counted. In parentheses, some DRE voting machines that have already been purchased may be adapted to be used as acceptable ballot marking devices, assuming their accessibility can be preserved or improved. End of paren. The technology of inexpensively providing good accessibility to voting systems has been commonly available for more than a decade, and it can and should immediately be required for and applied to all modern voting systems. This is clearly illustrated by the report Improving Access to Voting, a report on the technology for accessible voting systems, which Noel Runyon, our guest, wrote, and which is posted at voteraction.org and at demos.org. Design of new systems must include from the beginning accommodations to allow private and independent voting by individuals with a broad range of access needs. These systems must simultaneously ensure secure elections. We leaders and members of the disability rights community assert that neither accessibility for all voters nor the security of the vote can be sacrificed for the sake of the other. Fortunately, true accessibility and election security can both be achieved. There is no inherent incompatibility between voting system accessibility and security. We recognize that electronic ballot systems are inappropriate for use because these systems make it impossible for voters to verify that their votes will be counted as casts. We call upon all disability rights groups, other civil rights groups, election protection groups, and elected officials to recognize the necessity for an immediate ban on any voting system that fails to meet the twin requirements of full accessibility and election security. And beyond that statement, there are a list of signatories on this document. One of them, of course, happens to be a gentleman who signed on his own behalf, whose name is Chris Gray. And there are some other folks who have some history in the American Council of the Blind. Having provided that statement, I'm going to ask Noel one more question, really, and then I'm going to open it up for some more general questions. And my question really is, this is a statement, this is fine, but isn't it pie in the sky? Right now, we've got Congress people and the governor of the state of Florida essentially saying, throw out DREs, toss them away, and saying as well, spend huge amounts of money on systems that can have their ballots marked, and if they're not accessible, too bad. Because after all, if it hadn't been for you disabled guys, we wouldn't have gotten in this mess because we wouldn't have rushed toward these DREs with all their inherent problems, so it's really your fault. How do we get from that place, from a place where the disability community is screaming foul and you guys are disenfranchising us, at the same time as the verifiable vote people are screaming, we don't care about you, what we want to do is to create a verifiable vote that America can be proud of, and if you guys don't get to vote privately, tough. How do we manage to do those twin things that you say are possible and that the current atmosphere seems to suggest are not?
I look at these things first in terms of the technical possibilities, and I see technical solutions that are very viable and will work to provide the kind of accessibility and security. That is generally where I go. And as an engineer, I look at the technical solutions and consider whether they're done right, whether they are from the human factors side of it, which is part of the technology, is it going to really work for folks? However, I am not one to normally stick my head up and start getting shot at politically or being willing to even really make strong statements like this. So this statement was completely out of my nature, but I felt it was necessary because, many of us are being in the disabilities community are not being taken seriously because of some of the really extreme viewpoints that some folks have taken that were just non-compromising, stubborn viewpoints that were just still hanging on to paper. I thought it was important that we come out and say, look, we're willing to work with paper. We realize that there are solutions for paper, and we want to see those solutions. And that we want to work for and together to get those solutions and be part of the solution, not additional problem. I haven't seen as much of what Paul is talking about in terms of people saying, well, we'll blame disabilities folks for systems that have poor security. I worry about that backlash from the public. And this was because there was a difference in approach here. Some people, like Jim Dixon, felt we should go ahead and get the systems out there, even if there were flaws in them, and then straighten out the flaws later. I didn't feel, from what I understood, that the public was going to be really ready to go more rounds of funding and put up another $4 billion or so, and that what we should do is get the systems right this first time. But now we are faced with having to clean up these systems to try to either replace the systems completely or modify some of the systems. And the key is time frame. How much time is this going to take? There are people who are calling for Congress to have an immediate ban on all electronic ballot systems, not to be allowed in 2008 even at all. Just turn them off. And that, I think, is not very likely to fly politically. I did mention that I was asked to go to Washington a week and a half ago to testify in a hearing. And again, these aren't my nature, but listening to these people talk, there is plenty of disagreement there about whether something like that kind of a ban could even work. I think we should be making sure that it's clear that we will not accept having our accessibility to the voting system eroded and to have our rights to vote taken away from us. I think if we push all on the fronts of security, converting over to paper systems, we push on the fronts of accessibility, making sure we maintain good accessibility. If we have to back off anywhere on accessibility, it has to be with solid guarantees that problem will be fixed. And one front that people are talking about whether we have to back off is some people are now starting to really demand that the electronic ballot systems that were not verifiable but that get turned into ballot marking systems, or the ballot marking systems that started as ballot marking systems, that they be more verifiable, that they have complete verifiability of the printed ballot. That's an issue that will grow here. It'll be core at some of the arguments of whether something is accessible enough. We're going to have, I think, several years of transition, improving voting systems, without the real flaws that we have seen inherently in the system before. But it's going to take work and involvement and discussion on all of your part.
Hello, Noel. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I'm interested in this discussion tonight, as well as others, but I think this is probably the best one. Accessible voting, I think, is very important. I think the more I see, the more I know that technology has really helped us improve our lives greatly ever since we've gotten into it. And I think that it continues to do so to this day. But also, as far as accessible voting, I did see a machine that the Ingham County, which is a county in this area, had to demonstrate at one of our meetings, low-vision meetings, and I tried it out. It was just sort of a fake ballot, and it was a talking one. It really worked pretty well for me, I think, and I think it would have been good to use something like that, and I think it's great. I think privacy is important, but, sometimes if you don't have that, like I've had someone with me when I've been to a voting booth. My dad helped me out, and you can trust. I mean, I trust the people, whether that way or absentee, to vote the way I want them to from my ballot. But I like that, and I think that eventually, if we can get security problems worked out with computers and everything, the hacking and all that, it would be great for us to be able to vote in the privacy of our own homes with a computer, if that's possible, or by touch-tone phone. But I think it'll really help us if we can do all these things.
I didn't hear a question in that, and I agree with what you're saying in part. I personally do not feel we have to give up privacy, and there are plenty of horror stories about people having been cheated on, blind people who found poll workers actually cheated on them, and other people who had family members that would argue with them in the polling booth, even out loud. So I personally don't think we can make a judgment call for other people that may have more problems getting private voting. But we can certainly, with the technologies that we have currently, without even having to make giant leaps or what they call quantum leaps, we can have voting systems that will give us privacy. And also give us the security. Those are available now, and that's why I made this statement.
Joe from Boston, Massachusetts. I have two questions. I'll ask him, and I want to comment first on the voting, and you can respond, but I'll ask them both at once. Thank you, Paul, for doing the show and taking the time to let us ask. I had a voting, one of the pencil machines, I call it. I forgot the name. It had a keypad, and it had speech, and it explained up and down arrows, and it had like a thick ballot, and you could hear it going ch-ch-ch-ch. And the only thing you couldn't mark is, I think, absentee or something. But I was very impressed with it. That's why I wanted to remark on that. Noel, earlier in your topic, when you were discussing your what you did and your work with computers, and this came up because you brought up your and personality and your work, and could you put your website or the website up on the for the public so we can go get that article? Have you ever thought, and I'm serious about this, of having an unattended setup for a blind person? Because you know I've talked to you before. I'm a friend of Dick Ohms, and some of us have had a lot of computer problems, and we've been raped over the coals. And do you still build computers that are all in one? And because that would be a good thing. It would help blind people. They could do an unattended setup, or someone could do it, even pay to have it done. You need to know the hardware. But I wanted to ask these two questions, these, and make the comment of the polling machines. I had no problem. And my poll workers were very, very helpful. Thanks.
Questions on my own business and things that's a little off topic from here, and maybe you and I could talk about that more separately. I'm not planning to get more involved in that side of the business right now. Joe, we could talk about that more off topic, but it's basically, I think you're talking about something of using a system that can have like a hard drive backup. And we do that on our systems right now, where we have a hard drive that completely backs up the system and can be used to completely recover the system. And I think people can pretty easily implement systems like that. There are tools out there to allow you to do that. Regards our business here, as Paul indicated in his introduction, this is sort of this voting has taken over my life and has become something that's swamping so much of my time that's making it very hard for me to do any other useful work right now. My wife has a separate job nowadays doing something called VersaForm for another company, and so we aren't taking on new customers to build new systems. What I found was that we aren't leaving people in the lurch, I mean established customers, but today the computers aren't such open-heart surgery problems as they used to be. That doesn't mean the problems are all gone, but used to be trying to set up a talking, scanning computer system. Boy, it was open-heart surgery trying to insert scanning cards and OCR cards and speech cards and getting them not to fight with each other, and you had to worry about which end of the bus you plug the cards into and things like that. Things have gotten so much simpler now that they are much easier for people to support with out as experienced the resources and as we had in especially in my wife Debbie. By the way, Joe, the machine you were talking about sounds like you were talking about the AutoMark. It is one of the more popular ballot marking systems today. It's what New Mexico used after they've lost 12,000 votes there, and they threw out the Sequoia DRE electronic ballot machines, completely replaced them with optical scanners in the precincts for sighted people's paper ballots, and with these auto marks, which are a computerized system that allows you to mark your ballot. On the other question, yeah, I didn't mean to assume that you didn't prize privacy.
The whole issue of absentee ballots
there is at least a presumption among some of us who are big into polling place voting that those who vote absentee at this point in particular are almost traitors, in that what they're actually doing is they're generally ordering ballots that are inaccessible. They're generally succumbing to having somebody else fill the ballot out for them. And while they're certainly voting and exercising their right to vote appropriately, there are a lot of us who feel that they're also putting the whole issue of accessible voting in some danger by their numbers. Because I don't know what the numbers are in all districts, but there are an awful lot of areas, and South Florida is a good example, where a very large number of people with disabilities actually vote absentee. And it really doesn't matter whether you offer them private and independent voting. They're perfectly content voting absentee. They're going to continue voting absentee, and they're not going to change. Is that a serious issue, or is it another of the Paul Edwards blowing smoke kind of things, do you think?
No, I think it is a serious issue, and additionally some other reasons. One is that an example would be a friend of mine in Santa Cruz that went to vote, and when she walked into the polling place, there was a cheer from the poll workers because they said, "We're so glad you showed up, because when we had our poll worker training class, they were going to skip the part about accessibility." And we said, "Well, why?" And they said, "Well, because blind people and people with disabilities just vote absentee. They don't come to the polling place. So we're going to skip this." And these people said, luckily, said, no, we've got this gal. We know she's going to show up. We really have to know the machines." And so they had to insist on it. And so in some ways like that, we're hurting other people's ability. And we don't like to think of those responsibilities being heaped on our shoulders, but some come to us that way, unbidden, where by voting absentee, we're allowing the poll workers to just sort of shuck it off and say, "Well, nobody really votes, so we don't need the equipment. We don't need to learn how to use it. We don't need to make sure that it works." So that's one side of it. I mean, I think we need absentee voting for people that, you know, can't get to a polling place for real legitimate reasons, and the polling places aren't accessible, or maybe they're shut in terms of serious health problems, and they're in a hospital or places like that. That's a definite concern, and it's well worth people going the extra mile. I think it's one of the most embarrassing things I saw was. In a recent Colorado hearing, the Secretary of State was having people from the public come testify to the Secretary of State to try to get him up to speed about the issues. And there were a number of blind people weighed in. Interestingly, at that session, all three NFB people that stood up said, "We at NFB are neutral and not really taking sides as far as what kind of technology. We just want it to be accessible." There was another gal that stood up, and she was actually invited to speak, and I won't nail her by saying what organization she was with, but she went on and on for 10 minutes talking about her right to a private vote and how important that was, and she even dragged in things like references to Terry Schiavo and things like that about the ability to make this choice and all, and the impassioned plea for right to private voting. And near the end, the Secretary of State asked her, he said, "How did it work out for you when you voted?" He said, "How have you voted before?" She said, "Oh, absentee." He said, "Well, in your recent elections, when you had the choice of using DREs for the last two elections, how did that work out?" And she said, "Oh, well, I just voted absentee." There was an audible gasp from everybody in the room when they heard this gal confess to that, that here she was impassionately calling for this and then didn't even bother to go use the accessible voting system in her neighborhood. That kind of response is the sort of thing that those folks that Paul said are unreasonable on the other side gives them terrific ammunition to say, boy, we don't need accessibility. These people just want to vote absentee anyway, and here they claim it's very important, but they're not living up to using it. So we have to be careful about that. And I have a wonderful wife that I completely trust and would happily trust her to always mark my ballot right. But I've insisted on trying to use these DRE machines, even though they were cussedly hard to use and took me, in one case, an hour and 17 minutes on the machine trying to vote with it. Another case, an hour. Another case, you know, similar, 59 and a half minutes. So they're hard, time-consuming, frustrating to use. But when a newspaper office was asking me about my stories, and I told them about it, and they said, well, you aren't going to vote with these anymore. I said, well, I have to. And they said, well, wait a minute, I thought you didn't like these. And I said, I don't like them, but I have to learn about them, and I have to help support other people to use them. And I think, like Paul is doing, I really applaud what Paul's been doing, is getting out there, trying to help educate people about how to use what technology is there, and make the best of it.
Paul, this is Michael Bynes. I just wanted to weigh in and say that actually today my wife and I both voted in a local election using the accessible machine. We're one of the Diebold communities, and we have voted the last several elections in that manner. I always ask at the polling place, how many other people have you had come in who have used the accessibility features? And as a state ACB affiliate, we have made a point at every opportunity possible to try and promote voting at the polling place, and apparently with some success, because I have other members that are asking the same question. I don't know who the other people are in my precinct who are using the accessible machine, but there are several others that are, and I think that, you know, we have the ability to impact that and need to do so. I do want to raise a question for Noel, quite frankly, and that is, as I think back to not only the stories of the ballot boxes going into the river or coming out of the storage facilities if need be in Chicago, but certainly many other horror stories I've heard not only with paper, but the old Edison voting machines that were about the size of a mid-sized car that were the original mechanical lever machines with several thousand moving parts in them. Those machines had somewhere in the neighborhood of a 7% failure rate, and yet they were used for many years, and they did not produce a paper ballot. I'm not quite sure what has moved us to believe that paper is always going to be more effective than the DRE or other forms of voting. I'll acknowledge that that seems to be where we're at in this country right now, and it may be true that we've lost that battle, but in my state, we do not have a VVPAT requirement of any type. We are using a multiplicity of different brands of machines to achieve accessibility, because that was left a county option throughout the state. We did put in, with a lot of input from our affiliate, a very rigorous certification process where not only the federal standards and meeting them are used, but each voting machine that is certified for use in our state has to undergo a public hearing where people with disabilities, as well as the rest of the general public, can show up and put the machine through its paces and do with it the kind of things that Noel said he did at the NFB National Center in the show here the previous week. And I think that that's been relatively effective around the state. I think the question becomes, in a state where things seem to be working reasonably well, quite frankly, I'm not at all ashamed that the president of ACB signed the statement that was read. I think that's generally where nationally we need to go. But my wife and I were just talking about whether we're going to send a copy of that to our Secretary of State. The answer right now is not on your life. Because I'm not convinced that any voting system, whether it's paper, electronic, or whatever, can be so foolproof that there is not going to be security problems. I'm convinced that there are people who know how to get around paper ballot systems, and there are people like Noel who know how to get around DREs. But given the fact that I am a cynic that thinks that there is no truly foolproof system, my feeling right now is that in some states, we actually have been able to build something that is working. We haven't had major security breaches, and I'm not convinced that adding VVPATs no matter how accessible or anything of that sort is going to fix it. You know, would you agree that there may be a justification, Noel, for in some states simply not going there yet, because at the moment we're not having security problems, and we do have, at least from the blindness and low vision perspective, access?
One of the things that you were stating was that you're not aware that you have any security problems. This is one of the biggest issues with security problems, is that you can have totally missed the fact that the election was totally messed up because you don't know. They've proven here with the Princeton hacks that the systems can be hacked in ways that you can't tell it. And many of the sick people have said, well, it's not a problem as long as it's detectable. Detectability isn't the primary way of testing a security problem. The worst election you can have is the one where the security goes completely undetected, or the security threats and not threats, but the actual hacks go completely undetected. And so you can sit back feeling like there was no problem. So you did mention the lever machines. Lever machines did have their problems. They had what today's technology indicates is a bad error rate. They did have their ways of being hacked, where you shaved the wheels so that you'd throw a percent of votes every now and then to somebody else. The current systems, I will state categorically, are not perfect security-wise. And I'm talking about whether they're DREs or paper ballot systems. Even the optical scanners that are used to scan paper ballots can be hacked. And the big difference is, do you have a durable ballot that you can go back to? In the case of Sarasota, Florida, this is one of the real burrs in everybody's side right now. Sarasota, Florida lost 18,000 votes, apparently, in what Paul had described earlier as undervotes. This was in an important election. It wasn't one that was likely that everybody just blew it off and said, oh, we don't care. But 18,000 votes, and unfortunately, there's no way to go back and find out what the voter intended on that. Say, let's get back there and find out exactly what they wanted. So you have to just say, you lost it. Without going to another election, you can't get there. That was the case in New Mexico, where they had 12,000 votes blown off and could not recreate those votes and the voter intent. So if you have durable paper ballot systems, you can at least go back and start over. If you get total power failures and computer glitches and denial of services and stuff, you can at least use the paper. You can hand count paper. As many countries do, they have hand counting procedures that can turn out results within a day that are as accurate as the electronic votes have been, or more accurate, and where they're more open to the public. So having a durable ballot system is what's really important. And in the case of the I think you were indicating. I don't know. I assume you're talking about Kansas. You're talking about your voting systems there. You say that you don't have a paper trail. I should clarify that I think the original paper trails, as they were called, the some people refer to as toilet paper, but really we're talking about thermal paper tape, like your gas station receipts, thin, flimsy thermal paper tape, which is not a durable paper. That was what the vendors decided to offer up as a solution when they were told that we need to have paper. When computer securities experts said you need paper, the vendor said, okay, well, we'll stick these printers on because they're cheap. They weren't so cheap by the time they got through charging for them, but they were a cheap and very unreliable system. It was unreliable in the way the paper was loaded, the way they could not be printing and nobody noticed. For one very important reason, they weren't the ballot. They were just a trail, and people would look over there if they even saw it. They said, oh, well, that's just for audits. I don't care about it. I won't bother checking because there's 10 people behind me or an hour of people behind me in line, and poll workers are looking at me and giving me the hurry-up sign. And so people would feel really guilty about taking the time to check that separate paper to see if it's right and thinking it's only for auditing. So if it's a paper ballot, people treat it very differently. If they know it's their paper ballot, that's what their vote is, and that counts, that's what's meaningful for their tallies, they will pay attention to that.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you're listening to Tuesday Topics. Once again, your host, Paul Edwards.
I wanted to add two things to your response to Michael, because I think that they help to explain a little bit, certainly where I'm coming from. One of them is that it's accurate to say that there was an inaccuracy rate of between 6% and 7% on those machines. And there's a lot of information that we don't have about where that inaccuracy rate came from, but certainly some of it came from corruption. I don't think there's any question about that. In terms of current elections, most of the experts are claiming that we're getting to within somewhere between 1% and 2% accuracy across the board. And when there is a substantial component that is above that with machine elections, then it becomes a serious issue. And one of the reasons that I guess, or one of the things that convinced me, Michael, was some recent experiences that compared what happened in New Mexico in 2004 when they were using DRE machines and what happened in New Mexico in 2006 when they were using paper ballot machines. And in predominantly Hispanic areas in the state of New Mexico, the rate of error was approximately three times as high or more in 2004 when DRE machines were used than it was in 2006. I don't know precisely why that is, but it's a figure that's very concerning. And, certainly one of the factors is that a question that we really haven't spent much time looking at is, are we in fact designing technologies that are going to tend to disenfranchise the computer illiterate? And certainly that single statistic isn't enough to condemn the system, but it's certainly enough to raise a question that I think we need to look at. Does someone have another question for Noel?
I've had no problem at all with the voting machines, and neither has my wife. I might mention for those who don't know us that she is totally blind and uses the no-print ballot on screen. I use both the low vision and speech features together. And we are people who have probably become reasonably computer literate now, but we're old enough, certainly were not raised as such. What I would say is that regardless of what kind of technology you're using, whether you're using templates, whether you're using sleeves with the paper ballot or the DREs or whatever, we're still learning in terms of assisting, say, for example, the macular degeneration population and the older person who has multiple sclerosis, etc., in figuring out how to use this technology. That's not going to be something that we're going to solve quickly, no matter what we do, but our experience today, my wife and I both got a laugh out of the fact that our election laws require that everyone have exactly the same wording on every ballot. So on our electronic DRE machine, it told us what to do if we accidentally tore or put a stray mark on our ballot, which, given the fact that there was no paper ballot, it's all being done with speech on a screen, was rather hilarious. And I could see how that type of information would confuse the non-computer literate person who had not been as involved in the process as we do. Somehow that doesn't scare me, because those are problems that I think that we can fix.
Now, I assume you're talking about using the Diebold systems?
Yes, that is the system that our particular county is using.
Yeah, and the Diebold is one of the scariest, because its source code has ended up on the Internet, where they were insisting beforehand that was the source of their security, was keeping it private. And when states had asked to see it for being able to study it to make sure it was secure, they claimed, well, you can't do that because that's where the security comes from. And then they sloppily left it on a website that was publicly accessible, so it had ended up in public access. That was an example of extremely sloppy security on their part and a lack of respect for security. I mentioned earlier, and I think you were on probably then, when I talked about the fact that same Diebold machine that you have there has this problem that they found in Maryland, that I could hack it. I could hack it by making it not able to record any more votes for the rest of the day just by popping the memory card out and back in. And that's something that, you know, makes those systems of yours very vulnerable. And the big problem there is that you may never know whether it's a problem or not. Diebold, I think, did do some of the early improvements that were asked by people to make things accessible, in that they had a system that was one of the earliest to have simultaneous audio and visual capability to support the elderly folks that need both of those at the same time. Others like the Sequoia have promised it, and here we're talking about in terms of the electronic ballot systems. Ivotronic has not delivered it, and apparently will not deliver it in Florida. So this contrasts with the ballot marking devices, that most of which can do simultaneous and audio-visual. I say most because the IncaVote in L.A. does not do visual at all and does not do switched input at all. So it has some real limitations there. I think the fact that you haven't seen those problems doesn't mean they aren't there. The Hersey hacks, as well as and more recently the Feldman hacks from Princeton, demonstrate that now that people know that they're there, it's just like, you know, the biggest secret about the atomic bomb was knowing you could make one. Now that people really know that those hacks are out there, like the Diebold no-counting hack and the Sequoia reset hack, those systems are very vulnerable, and those things have to be attacked and are fixed rapidly. The other thing we haven't discussed here is that we were told originally here these systems were going to be secure and they're going to be accessible because there was going to be rigorous federal testing. And we were promised that. And the vendors moaned and groaned about all this rigorous federal testing they were going through. And that was the reason they couldn't make these improvements we were asking for. When Sam Chin, who I hope is still on, and others, talked to the vendors and gave them our input, and then they said, well, but we have to go through rigorous federal certification that's real expensive, and so it won't be in this version or the next. Turns out there was no such thing as federal certification. That was an out-and-out lie. There was private testing where the manufacturers would go out and pick themselves a private laboratory and pay that private laboratory to do the tests that they wanted them to do and to give them a certification. They had the choice of going to a different company if one of them was too severe in their testing, didn't test things the way they wanted to. There was a complete conflict of interest on these testing laboratories called ITA, or independent test authorities. They weren't independent and they weren't real authorities because they clearly let through all of these flaws in machines that showed up, like the Sequoia reboot and the Diebold no count and these problems. So it means that independent testing authority was completely broken. It was a broken system, and that was allowing us to get totally flawed DRE machines. And frankly, that's part of what's behind the movement to try to throw out these DRE machines. A lot of people recognize that they were flawed, just shoddy, and that the testing didn't find the shoddiness because it was shoddy, and that they feel that even if it wasn't inherently flawed, that they should be thrown out and start over again. I'll stop. Do you have another question?
This is Michael Byington. Put in a word for the fact that what's being said about the federal testing is definitely true there. We're very aware of that issue in our state, and that is one of the reasons that our affiliate urged and demanded and got in-state certification public hearings where we could go try to break those machines. And regardless of where the rest of the security issues that we're talking about today come down, regardless of whether DREs can be fixed or whether we're going to need to go to templates, paper ballots, opticals, character scan, whatever. I can't emphasize to people listening out there enough that your Secretary of State does have the option to hold in-state public hearings each time he or she certifies a voting machine to be used in that state, but most states don't. It has been an immensely valuable tool for us, and I would suggest, I know Noel's trying to tell me I simply don't know about the problems, that they really do exist or that they could, but I think it's probably why we've had less problems in this state than some of the others have had. Those machines were tested by people who were blind and visually impaired before the counties were ever allowed to buy them.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what Michael is saying. Florida also has some very strict certification guidelines and very strict certification rules, and actually did involve blind and visually impaired people in the testing process as well. So I agree with you, Michael. Noel, we are rapidly approaching the end of what for me has been a very interesting couple of hours. And what I think we probably need to do as a last exercise is to kind of focus on where we are. So I'm going to try to summarize where I think we are, and then I'm going to ask you to tell us, again, why we should sign your statement and where we should go from here. We, it seems to me right now, are at a crossroads. We're at a crossroads where those who demand an appropriate paper trail have gotten to the place where they have convinced pretty substantial numbers of folks that DRE machines are not very accessible or very secure. Second, people in the disability community have kind of circled the wagons and are essentially saying, save our DREs, and we don't really give a damn if they're not very secure as long as we can vote. Those twains just don't meet. We've got to find some way of getting past that situation. And it seems to me that perhaps your statement represents an option. And perhaps as well, beyond your statement, you could talk for a couple of minutes about where we in the disability community really need to go from here to try to assure that we can save as much as we can. But I need to say to folks that from my perspective, we're in danger of losing an awful lot because, in my opinion, there are an awful lot of folks who are bound and determined to have a paper trail who don't care very much about accessibility. Noel, where do we go from here?
Well, I wanted to thank Mike for his inputs because I think what he's doing, I very much applaud. I want to see people involve themselves in the system because it was cutting us out, cutting the public in general out as the vendors were calling the shots and they were not allowing even testing. It was actually and is illegal in many states for anybody in the state to test the voting systems. They've actually got laws like that. In Florida, for example, you had that law. So there are restrictions on that, and we need to be opening those things up for more public viewing. The people getting involved in looking at their polling places, like I say, I will go to vote just to find out how the machines and the process are doing, even if I didn't really need to. And people should do that, and they should be speaking up when they see these problems. They should be getting educated. I think other works that people have produced, like mine and some of the NDRN, National Disability Rights Network papers, and Diane Golden and others, the Brennan Center report from New York Brennan Center, those are things to help people get educated and speaking in knowledgeable ways about these products. And getting involved in the testing. One of the real weaknesses, as you saw in Colorado, was John Gardner there sat down and looked at these systems and did the accessibility assessment himself where he said, well, it looks like this Braille is pretty good. This guy didn't know whether Braille was upside down, sideways, or what, or inside out. And listening to the audio and said, well, he finally figured out how to do it. And he had to draw a flow chart to figure out how to vote, and that was actually in his notes. But he said, yeah, I think blind people can do this. So people like that that have no experience and are not willing to bring in experts that have the knowledge in accessibility, they shouldn't be making those decisions. We shouldn't be letting them do that. So getting ourselves involved in an informed way at all different levels of the process are very important. One of the weaknesses we've had is a few individuals have stood up as the experts and representatives of all people with disabilities, in particular AAPD, American Association of People with Disabilities, particularly Jim Dixon, who has done a lot of good for I think, the movement, but he represents himself as speaking for almost everybody with disabilities. And that's simply not true. There are a lot of others of us that have different opinions and aren't as stubborn and can see ways of getting changes. And we shouldn't let these people just speak for us. So I think by doing the kinds of things Mike and folks are doing to get in the process, to help in the testing, to become part of the discussions and bring other ideas to the table, I've stated very strongly that I think the paper systems, as we go ahead and convert to more and more paper systems, we need to be there at the tables helping to make sure those systems are accessible and that and representing in a very reasonable way. I think, Paul, some of the things you've heard about people saying, well, we don't care about those people with disabilities. My own experience with everybody in, say, the Election Verification Network, which is a list of people all over the country involved at all sorts of levels with the voting systems, everything from, you know, poll workers, county clerks, on up to, you know, in no hierarchical sense, but up or through computer scientists, securities experts, and academia and all. Those people don't seem to me to be saying we don't care about access. Every one of them, not just because they think I'm bigger than them, they really do seem to think that accessibility is a very important thing, and they also see how it can be there and possible. You may have seen some other more fringe elements, that, and I believe that those are there, some of the blogs that are out there and others that are just saying we need security first and worry about accessibility later. I think by working with organizations in a friendly and well-informed manner, and to bring up these access issues, that we can get a good solution. And I'm finding that the people in the security side of it, if you want to call it that, have been very receptive to my inputs about accessibility. And when I tell them something's necessary, I don't see a lot of people arguing that, well, okay, you guys, you disabilities guys ought to think about whether that's really important or not. They really seem to accept it. So I think we can do an awful lot of good with this kind of involvement. But it's been the grassroots movement to try to get the access, and it's also been grassroots movement to try to get the security, because this business was dominated by the vendors. And when the vendors got the county clerks involved, the county clerks ended up in conflicts of interest positions where they just spent $11 million. They aren't about to turn around and tell you it's broken and not working. They're going to want to try to make it work, and they're going to want to report it as working. And so we've got a system that, from a grassroots level, we all need to get involved. And I don't like this because I hate writing. I hate public speaking like this. I dislike it. As a citizen, I feel we have to do this because the system is so messed up that it requires our input like this. And so not just discussing among ourselves here, which could get nothing done, but getting out and getting into the voter access advisory committees like Roger Peterson and I are on in Santa Clara here, your local, get involved with your Secretary of State, other regional level things on committees. They seem to be, to me, in general, willing to listen to our input if we'll say it in a reasonable manner. And reasonable means not the same old stories of dragging in lots of people with wheelchairs, crutches, and guide dogs, and canes. We have a lot of poor folks with, you know, that are pathetic almost. Some people try to portray that image, and that's not flying anymore. That people are saying that we don't buy, it's almost bogus. They're saying we want to hear people address the real issues.
I would actually love to go on talking for a long time further, but we've actually run out of time. We are up to the hilt with issues. I'd like to thank you very much for being involved. some of Noel's materials, if you're interested in signing on to the statement that we read at the beginning of this program, you can send an email to voting@skyhighway.org. And if you are interested in seeing Noel's report, it is available in two places. And Noel, if you're there, tell us what those two places are, because I'm having a mind block.
Okay, thank you. The two websites are voteraction.org, that's voter action, one word, or demos.org. Demos is spelled D-E-M-O-S, that's demos.org. They have the press release with this position statement. They also have my improving access to voting report in several different formats. The press release is also in different formats. And the voting at skyhighway.org is an email address that you can send a request either to just be signed on, in which case leave your the text of your name and title or affiliates, if any, that how you want it listed. Or you can ask for us to send you a copy of the report if you can't find it on the web pages.
Noel, thanks very much for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, this is an issue that is not going to go away. I believe that by 2008, there will be many constituencies where voting will be handled very differently from the way it was in 2004. Whether disabled individuals will be more fully enfranchised or more completely disenfranchised remains to be seen. And it's very much up to us to determine which of those two things happens. Noel Runyon, thank you very much for being here. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to these 2 hours on voting access, and thank you for tuning in to Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday, 1 hour Universal Time. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. The first time you enter the chat room, the software will automatically download and install on your computer. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each show begins, those online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room service and how it works. An announcement promoting the topic to be discussed will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends list early each week. So we hope you will come and join us Tuesday each week when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. Again, the URL is ourplace.acbradio.org.